A1 Custom Car Care, it's, well, it may not be too late. I know they do keep a pretty busy schedule at their three area locations, but the weather that is expected to come is just another one of the many reasons that you should keep your vehicle up to date, not just when it comes to oil changes and fluid changes, which are very important, well beyond just oil, but tire rotation, balance. Make sure that your tread is the acceptable depth. When you hit something that's slick, slick is slick, ice is ice. It doesn't really matter what your tread depth is when you hit a sheet of ice. But when it does matter, whether you have your wheel maintenance in line is once you get off that ice and you're talking about that moment or two where you have hopefully the ability to get control of your vehicle instead of sliding into oncoming traffic or off into a ditch. And while sometimes that is totally unavoidable, sometimes it isn't. And it can be the difference as to whether or not you have those tire treads where they should be or your balance properly maintained. Is yours? I'm one of these guys. I don't know. Whenever I take it in for an oil change, I just ask them, will you check this out? And you ought to as well. That way you're not worrying about it today when we've got a winter storm watch approaching. We'll get into that winter storm watch coming up here in just a couple moments. Jason Rima first with the latest news update. First Alert forecast sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service. As mentioned there in the news, that winter storm watch Tuesday night to Thursday night. Today, sunny, high near 60, 43 for a low tonight. Rain is going to make its way into the area tomorrow, mainly afternoon, a high of 56. Then those temperatures, obviously, are going to begin dropping into the overnight hours with a low of 28, which is where we will be seeing that rain transition to freezing rain sleet, possibly mixed with snow throughout Wednesday, then turning to all snow sometime mid to late afternoon, a high of 32. So where that is hovering can make a big difference as to what happens, not just in the air, but on the ground. And that snow, heavy at times, continuing through Wednesday night with a low of around 16. Talked in the last couple of weeks about the redistricting and how Missouri Republicans have been fighting over whether or not to go to a 7-1 map versus keeping the 6-2, which many argue will become a 5-3. Now, if these numbers are foreign or confusing to you, that references the number of districts that Republicans have, congressionally speaking, versus Democrats. And right now, we have a 6-2 situation. Six Republicans, two Democrats. And with the redrawing of the district, some were encouraging it to become a 7-1. In other words, there was the opportunity to draw things up in a way in which Republicans would have seven and Democrats would have one. The battle here is between many within the Republican Party. And some in the Republican Party are arguing, listen, that this is what the Democrats do and they have power, so we need to fight fire with fire. Otherwise, we're going to lose this thing long term. And others, you know, the combination of things, well, that's not right to do that. And some saying that it won't beat court challenges and so forth. And I've argued, aside from whether it's fair, whether it's honest, whether it's gerrymandering, fact of the matter is Democrats do take full advantage of these situations, and that's how it is that Democrats end up beating Republicans, because Republicans won't play those games. And to illustrate that point, there is a story in the Daily Caller in which Democrats have released their map, their proposed map for redistricting, in which they eliminate half of Republican seats, leaving it 22 Democrat districts, 4 Republican districts. Of the 22 districts, it's being described as brutal. This is why Democrats win and Republicans lose, because they are willing to do this stuff. And again, you may argue, but that it's wrong and I'd rather be on the right side of this issue. That's fine, but understand you're going to die on it. And you're going to take your party down with you. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. We're going to shift over to something that's important that the vast majority of you aren't aware of, because it's not really the sort of thing that necessarily gets a lot of coverage, or if it does, it's almost just an in-passing news item, and it's regarding the director of the Department of Health and Senior Services in Missouri. And I don't know a tremendous amount of background on this, which is why we're going to have Bev Aylin with us here. She's the state director of Concerned Women for America, and give us all the insight on this. But as I understand it, he's been serving as interim. There's a requirement that within a certain period of time that will be expiring here before too long, that if he is going to be in that position permanently, he has to be confirmed. But there are grave concerns amongst many about him being in that position. And Bev Aylin, I want to welcome you. Thank you for being here this morning. And is that setup correct and accurate?
Good morning. I didn't hear a thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I was what I was telling people is that we've got this individual who's been an interim director of the Department of Health and Senior Services. There is a time limit here that's coming up in which he needs to be permanently put in that position, if that's going to be the case. But there are grave concerns amongst a lot of people about him being in that position.
Yes, that's very true. We knew there was trouble with Donald Karoff with his appointment when the governor announced it in July, and finding out that this Donald Karoff has spent 30 years in public health in Illinois, working for the state of Illinois. And then when he retired, he spent two years as the director of the Illinois Emergency Management Agency there during the COVID. And during his meet and greet meeting with the House Public Health Committee in September, he indicated his priority was to rid Missouri of COVID via vaccination. And then went head-to-head, or toe-to-toe, I should say, with a couple of committee members. Not all of them. I wish all of them would have been a little bit rougher on Karoff than Representative Lisa Thomas. So anyway, but yeah, there's a little bit of confusion because he was appointed by Governor Parson in July to fill the position of the director of the Department of Health and Senior Services. And he took office September 1st, but because he was appointed during the interim, the Senate has to confirm him within the first 30 days of session. So that ends this Saturday, February 5th, because they went into session January 5th. So the clock is ticking, and the more we learn about Karoff, the more sinister it becomes. And he's never said that he supported vaccine mandates, but he stated several times that he wants 100% vaccination rate here in Missouri. And if you see the program his wife is using in Illinois, Shield T3, we adopted it here in Missouri in June. So all these pieces are pointing to we have some tough times ahead with this man, as with his worldview, his medical system worldview, being head of our Department of Health and Senior Services. Plus, I can't prove that he's not pro-life, but now that he's in Missouri, he's not made any statements about how he regards the sanctity of human life. You know, I can see that 30 years in Illinois, if you're pro-life, you kind of keep quiet about it. Well, I wouldn't keep quiet about it, but some people would keep quiet about it because he didn't want to jeopardize his job or whatever. But now that he's in Missouri, he can be who he wants to be, and he can be free to be pro-life and be glad to be in Missouri, but that's not the case. He's been real mum on the word, and the best that he's done so far is promise he wasn't going to mess with any of the regulations that we have already on the books regarding abortion clinics, and that's the regulations that the former head of the department used to deny the license to the Planned Parenthood in St. Louis, the only abortion clinic left in Missouri. So anyway, so there's a whole bunch, and so we have a chance today. His name comes before the gubernatorial appointment committee for his formal hearing, and then we're hoping, with all the people contacting the members, the Republican members on the committee, that they won't even vote his name out today. they can. They can vote his name out as early as today, or they can vote it out any time, you know, this week. But, of course, they have to confirm him before Saturday, so it can get very, very interesting. So,
I'll say just right out of the gate, you said 30 years. What was his position in Illinois?
He was. He ended up as deputy director of the public health department.
Yeah. Well,
and you know, right there. I mean, there isn't anybody else, even in Missouri or anybody else in the country that would fit the criteria we need for the director, but somebody who was comfortable in Illinois.
Well,
for
that's
over 30 years.
Well, and not just. Here's the way I look at it. It's not so much whether he was comfortable in Illinois, but that Illinois was comfortable with him. For that long, because most people know Illinois is a total, complete train wreck, and this is a state that continues to make bad decision after bad decision and then double down on those bad decisions for 30 years to see this person as their guy. That in and of itself gives me great concern, and you know, some may say that's not fair, but you know, just looking at Illinois' track record here.
Right, his wife has also worked that long. So anyway, yeah, you're right. That sends up red flags to anybody.
Yeah,
a bureaucrat from Illinois.
We're talking with Bev Ahlen, the State Director of Concerned Women for America. What influence does a person in the position of the Director of the Department of Health and Senior Services have over these sorts of policies? You mentioned he's somebody who said that he believes that the key to eliminating COVID is through vaccines. Does he have much influence over that sort of push in terms of, you know, whether it's mandating people or putting undue pressure on them to get it done?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. Well, I can tell you his influence is his position.
Right.
He can, set a standard and ask for the health departments to, in the different counties, to follow his guidelines. Now, they don't have to, but many of our county health departments, even during this COVID, the last 2 years, have fallen in line.
Oh, yeah.
With,
it's cover for him. It's just easier.
The same as Dusty. You know, he could set an example for the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, because that's the other fight. You have parents all over the state that are, fighting their school boards to send their kids to school unmasked. And but Dusty, you know, could take the lead, and then they set the example. And, of course, the same thing with the school district. The school districts do not have to adopt it, but if it comes from Dusty, which comes from the Department of Health and Senior Services, there's just a lot of power there, a lot of strength there.
What do you have a pulse or feeling of the pulse here, the likelihood? I mean, you're obviously very involved, at least in knowing the players. You mentioned that, you know, it could perhaps not even get out of committee, but that's got to happen by Saturday. The makeup of that committee, and do you have a count, if you will, of those that you all believe already are opposed to, those that are for, and those that probably need to hear from people?
Well, we have... Senator Mike Moon is on that committee, thankfully, and of course he'll be asking some tough questions today in the hearing.
No doubt, yeah.
Senator Paul Whelan from South St. Louis County, I guess, Jefferson County, is very, very pro-life, and I would hope that he would, on the pro-lifeness of it, would come out against him. However, we have, I should have counted them, probably... Yeah, six other senators. Senator Schatz is the president pro tem, and he's the chairman of this committee. It's always, you know, the way it is. And then Senator Caleb Rowden, who is the floor leader, he's also the vice chairman of this committee. And there's been a lot, you know, a lot of stress in the state Senate of late because there's a small group of senators who want to uphold the Republican platform, and then there's a larger group of Republican senators who pick and choose what they want to uphold and when they want to uphold it. And so we have the rest of the Republicans on this committee are part of that. So they could be influenced because they don't have a rock-solid foundation, and maybe if they see that they would be better off to ignore the nomination today and not take action on it, or maybe even vote no, hopefully vote no if Schatz would bring it up in executive session, so that they would feel the heat from the people in Missouri and know that we're not going to not going to forget this. This is the last 2 years. We've been fighting this COVID conspiracy shutdown control, COVID control for 2 years. And this is kind of culminates today. We're just kind of realizing in the last week that really that this this appointment, confirmation, I should say, really is the do or die moment here in Missouri.
Of all the states to draw someone from. I mean, I suppose it could have been New Jersey as well. But, I mean, Illinois, it's like, for Pete's sakes. Is this a gubernatorial appointment?
Yes, it's Governor Parson, who is our supposed, you know, he's supposed to be pro-life. Yeah. And that would have been the first question a person, a governor should ask. A person who wants to be the director of our health and human senior services.
Well, I don't,
because the seniors are involved here too. Because if you don't have if you don't want to protect human life from that very first moment of conception to that last natural breath, seniors are in jeopardy as well as handicapped. So it goes across the whole spectrum.
Well, I don't know the full list of those on. What is that committee again?
It's the gubernatorial appointment committee.
Okay.
And you one can go to my friend with the Inform Health Choice Missouri has a really good, you know, she has the information right up there on their page, their home page. So if a person wants to go to ihcm.info, there'll be the call to action, and there's several links to articles of why we know that this person is not good for this position. And then there's also the phone numbers and email addresses of every member of the committee.
Well, I can hear. I was going to say, I can hear my producer. She's finding it as we speak. So we'll get that up and we'll push that out as well for people that do want to communicate to those. And I know a lot of our listeners, you know, Mike Moon covering much of the area here will, I'm sure, be in contact with him and just most likely giving him moral support.
Go directly to Schatz and Rowden because those are the gatekeepers.
Okay, got it. Shouts
Thank
and
you
round.
So much, Nick.
All right, Bev Ahlen, the State Director of Concerned Women for America. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye. One of the reasons I wanted, and we've got to go to a break here, and we've got traffic as well. If we've learned anything during this COVID deal is how impacting people that we never even know about are on our lives and on these laws and are, whether it's in some areas of the country, it's different than others, but some of these are national decisions when it comes to mandates, when it comes to, you look at what happened down in Florida recently. You have these, what many doctors have felt were life-saving, potentially life-saving drugs when it came to fighting COVID. And then you just have some nameless people at the FDA say, nope. I heard the Surgeon General of Florida on with Glenn Beck. He said literally thousands of people in Florida were going in that next day in order to get their treatment. They were told, sorry, the government said you can't. I mean, this is socialized medicine, what we're dealing with here. So the point being is while we see positions like this, we think, I've never heard of this guy. What difference does this make? Understand the vast majority of the hurt that's been put on Americans in the name of COVID have been by people in positions like this. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. One of the area's most anticipated events is coming up. It is upon us. I'll share it with you. I know it just sounds like a goofy tease to keep you listening. I know you're going to keep listening anyway. Plus the updates, latest on the weather, winter storm watch, Tuesday night to Thursday night, all straight ahead. I'm Nick Reed. First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Today, sunny high of 60, 43 tonight. Rain going to make its way in tomorrow afternoon with a high near 56. Rain Tuesday night, a low of around 28, which, of course, is where things are going to start to get a little dicey. And depending on where you are in the listening area, this could vary. Rain, freezing rain, sleet, possibly mixed with snow throughout the day. Then all snow after 5 p.m., a high near 32. Wednesday night, snow heavy at times, a low around 16, and that heavy snow possibly continuing on into Thursday, which is Thursday night when the expiration is expected to occur for that winter storm watch, and of course all that is subject to change. Now, that being said, and we were talking off air, it's one of the area's most anticipated events, Pineapple Whip. Now, it did you read through this press release?
Yes.
So it sounds like they sort of did a last minute because of the weather coming up. They actually started on Friday. Did you get that as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then today, is that right?
Yeah. So my understanding of it is they were open Friday through today, and then they are closing down Tuesday through Thursday to avoid the weather.
Right.
And then they are reopening again Friday through Sunday, the 4th through the 6th.
Is it, I'm trying to see, I've got a couple of different bits of info here. Okay, so it is the 3850 South Campbell, just north of Krispy Kreme, so that location there,
yep.
Primrose and South Campbell. Customers have the option to walk up to order next to space heaters or stay warm in their cars and use the drive-thru that they will set up just for the whip solstice. So this is a fun thing that they do every year around winter solstice, and give those of you who just live on Pineapple Whip throughout the more reasonable weather seasons and you miss it and you have that drought, if you will, you get a taste of it for 1 week until they do return in the more reasonable weather. I don't know exactly when they return. I don't know if it's weather dependent or a date on the calendar, but nonetheless, so you got an opportunity today and then at the end of the week as well, right? Do we get it?
I think so.
All right, very good. Excellent. Is it just the pineapple flavor? I didn't see that. I didn't look. I know in the past it seemed like they did pineapple in one. I started talking about this and I didn't have the whole thing printed out here in front of me. I know.
Well, don't worry. I have it in front of me.
Okay.
So they do have the traditional pineapple flavor, but they are serving a rotating second flavor.
Okay.
So it doesn't say what that is, but they do also have pints of different flavors too. It says they have mango peach, strawberry kiwi, lemon berry, grape, orange, and banana pomegranate.
It's one of the many things synonymous with Springfield.
Yum.
I want to, for a couple of moments, revisit something that we were talking about earlier, though a different angle, regarding this ongoing attack on the girls at UPenn and this guy who I think 3 seasons swam as a male, then over the summer said, he came back, was like, by the way, my name's Leah now. I didn't have any parts changed or anything, but I'm a girl, so I want to compete against, and he's knocking all these. In fact, there was an op-ed piece written by one of the swimmers who was, or was it a, maybe that was a different girl. I don't know. There are a number of girls across this country that are facing these scenarios where they are the top of their sport in the state, and then a guy comes in, declares himself a girl, and just starts knocking them out of the ballpark and winning records. Because there are certain sports that men, because of the way the bone structure and muscle structure, it doesn't, you know, the testosterone deal is irrelevant largely when it comes to particular sports, but it's bone structure and it just, they have an advantage. Just like there are certain things physically women have an advantage regarding. A dozen UPenn law groups are coming to the defense of Leah Thomas, claiming his success is due to hard work, not because he's a man competing against women. Now, before we get too far into this, this really isn't that difficult to figure out. Do you know how you can tell whether or not this is legit? A legit position? Look at how he did when he was competing against men. Do you know how he did? Not very well. If his success had nothing to do with being a man competing against women, but simply was because of hard work, then he would have experienced that same excess against men. But he did not. He didn't do anything. He wasn't breaking records. He wasn't winning awards. Some of this, the left, they like to make things overly complicated to confuse people. They'll start talking about, well, you know, hormone injections, and they use a lot of scientific speak. Oh, well, here's an expert here that says it really doesn't make much of a difference. Well, if that's the case, then why do we even have men versus women sports? Why not have them all compete against one another? See, these are obvious questions that negate any sort of argument they try to make or any sort of expert. You don't need an expert in order to figure some of this out. You don't need an expert to tell you whether or not this guy who self-identifies as a woman's success is due to the fact that he's just a really good female swimmer or because he's a guy swimmer. Look at how he did when he competed against men versus women. When he was competing against men, he wasn't doing that well, relatively speaking, in the competition. It's not that when he started competing as a woman, his personal record started becoming, you know, something that was identifiably remarkable. But it's that swimming is one of those sports that men are physically, they have an advantage in. Now, these are individuals, and this is what should scare us all, who are on a university level, and they are going to be attorneys, lawyers. Thomas, who is still a biological male, and what we talked about earlier is the girls, he walks around, sometimes showing his male private parts in the girls' locker room. He openly talks about the fact that he still likes girls and dates girls, and the girls who have a problem with it, they're told to keep the pretty little mouth shut. Those of you who have girls, daughters in high school, aren't you really looking forward to this stuff? Your daughter being treated as a second-class citizen. Thomas, who is still a biological male and has undertaken only the bare minimum to transition to a woman, joined the swimming team as a woman this season after spending nearly 3 years competing unremarkably as a man. However, since joining the women's team, he's been obliterating one woman's swimming record after another. The column, published last week by the student newspaper The Daily Pennsylvanian, insists that Thomas has not enjoyed success this year because she is transgender, according to the letter, saying that Thomas, who has been swimming since she was 5 years old, had an incredible season following a year-long break. She won events, broke records, earned bids to the NCAA championship, the column exclaims. Thomas did not succeed because she's transgender. She succeeded because of the hard work she's put in throughout her long swimming career. But isn't it amazing that none of the records were broken until she started competing against women? Or he. It defies all logic. None of it is based in logic. You know, there was this story, and it came and it went. We touched on it, and I heard it talked about on a number of other shows, where there was a female to male that was in a swimming competition against this male who claims he's a female. And the female-to-male won. And there were some that said, oh, see? The woman who identifies as a man beat the man who identifies as the woman. And that was supposed to negate this idea, this belief, that men are naturally, they naturally have an advantage when it comes to swimming. Now, the reason I think this story didn't catch on and get a lot of headlines is because it's confusing as hell. Especially when they're written, because you have a lot of these different articles that refer to the he as a she and the she as a he, and you're like, I don't even know who's what. Man to a woman, woman to a man, which one won? There have been numerous girls who swim at UPenn with Leah who say that whole thing was a setup, that the two transgenders, they're friends with one another. And it was planned ahead of time because they thought it would negate this idea that men are naturally, or that they naturally have an advantage when it comes to swimming than women do. But like I said, it didn't catch on, and I think because the whole story is just confusing to people. It is absolute madness. And the fact that you have these university campuses in this country that portray themselves as lands of equality, yet women are being told to keep their mouths shut and to sit down and shut up anytime a man walks in the locker room and identifies as a woman. And these are supposed to be areas in which people learn how to think. And to see those that are in charge of these universities and making these decisions that have tremendously negative impacts on young women have such an inability to even use common sense. And I'll tell you something else about this, and it's part of the reason so many people don't weigh in on it, and it's also a horrible weapon to use against girls, is they label anyone who wants to talk about this as being anti-trans or transphobic. Being opposed to a transgender competing against girls, a guy who self-identifies as a girl, being opposed to that and declaring that transgender is like saying you're against men or you're anti-man because you don't think that a man should be able to compete against women. It doesn't have anything to do with being pro-one or against the other. It's simply recognizing that one has a built-in advantage over the other. It doesn't mean one is, you know, overall in the scheme of life, ethically, morally better or worse than the other, but in that context, there is an unfair advantage. And to accuse girls who have worked their entire lives from the age of 4, 5, 6, building their lives around it. I'm not an athlete. But you hear these stories about how compared to the rest of us, these young people, they will get up before the sun is up and they work, and then after school and they just train, and then to one day be told, oh, by the way, this guy here, he's going to now compete against you and you're going to like it. And if you don't, then we're going to come down on you. By the way, the university has said that they will sue on behalf of him, if anybody tries to stop them from forcing girls to compete with him. Not so on behalf of protecting the girls, but on the behalf of the man. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. American Transmissions Talk and Text Line 447-KSGF. It's easy to utilize that with the app, the KSGF app. We have the on-demand section there as well. It doesn't cost you anything. Download it from your marketplace. Nebraska alters Herbie Husker cartoon to avoid white supremacy link. Anytime I see a headline like this, I try to guess. Like, all right. Which stupid street are we going to go down here? I was at a bit of a disadvantage not being a huge sports junkie, particularly when it comes to colleges and universities. So I didn't even know what the mascot was. But once I learned that the mascot was known to give the okay gesture, I thought, oh, well, here we go. Now, this once again demonstrates that in this, we really are in real danger in this country. We have these areas in which young people are sent, and they are supposed to learn how to think critically. Yet the people who run them clearly are some of the stupidest people, and they make some of the dumbest decisions that have no connection to critical thinking. In the original logo, Herbie Husker is making the okay gesture, you know, with your hand. And the story reads, some over the last few years have connected the symbol to white supremacy, three straight fingers making a W, and the circle form next to the extended finger making the P. Now, from where did this originate? This originated several years ago in an effort to troll people on the left. It was a combination of trolling people on the left and at the same time demonstrating how stupid this person believed that individuals on the left could be. and I believe it was on Reddit that was used as the platform to do this, and to pretend as if the originator of all this was some sort of concerned lefty who was out there trying to fight white supremacy, and claimed, just totally made it up, that the AOK sign was actually secret. It was a secret signal that white supremacists would throw to one another to let one another know, oh yeah, I'm a white supremacist too. It's not even laughable, because it's such a pathetic twisting of reality. I mean, not to even break down all the reasons that wouldn't make sense. You know how many people do the AOK sign that aren't white supremacists? Like, almost everybody. So really, that's what you're going to pick as your secret signal, something that virtually everyone does anyway? Does that make a lot of sense? If you're going to pick a secret signal so that you could identify someone, I guess, out of a crowd or at a wedding or bar mitzvah or whatever, you're looking for your fellow white supremacist, I know, I'm going to come up with a secret signal that virtually everyone has done at some point in their life. That doesn't even make sense. But this was part of the point, to illustrate how foolish and ignorant some people on the left can be, and how willing they are, just for the sake of being outraged, they will grab onto something and believe it and run with it. And so he comes up with a signal that, and it could have easily been a thumbs up, but the, you know, they thought, oh, well, the three, we could claim that's a W for white, and then sort of looks like an upside down P for power. Now, after it went viral, the guy copped to it because he thought, I made my point. This is my point, and I made it. What I think he probably did not expect, that even once he revealed that the whole thing was a joke, the left continued to run with it. And still to this day, this is how ridiculous we have become as a society. And that these things are happening on university campuses, that something that was totally made up in order to prank people on the left and to prove a point, even once he admits it, they still say, oh no, it's got a connection to white supremacy. It is no wonder we continue to slide down, 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 down. And I'm telling you, it is not simply military power that we have to worry about when it comes to countries like China. It is this sort of stuff. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Wanted to read this to you. It's one of my favorite reviews of Emily Johnson Rhodes Real Estate. My family was going to be moving to Springfield from out of state. Someone recommended Emily to us as a realtor. We could not have made a better decision on choosing Emily. She went above and beyond to help us find a home that was perfect for us and within our budget. This was not an easy task with the current housing market. She did multiple showings for us on very short notice. Most of them had to be FaceTime since houses were selling so quickly. She did not skip a beat, was always available to answer our questions and do showings. We were first-time home buyers, and she helped us through the entire process. She answered all of our silly questions, made us feel like confident home buyers. Emily's very knowledgeable about all aspects of buying a home, which was extremely helpful to us as first-time home buyers. She's very personable and professional. She made a stressful process as easy as it could be for us. I would recommend Emily to anyone looking to buy or sell a home. Emily Johnson, Rhodes Real Estate.